as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, what you need to learn to do is to deliver that value in a cost-effective manner. So let's say what you're delivering is worth $1 million. Well, if it costs you $2 to deliver it, you're like Lucy, you know, I Love Lucy, where you're trying to make it up on volume, you're losing on every sale. Not going to work so well. So the purpose of a business, you form a business to deliver the value, right? So you have a product, a service, whatever that could be. It could be tangible, intangible, right? Then you have the business operations that delivers that value.
Hey babes, it's Kayla Kraft with the Mommy Millionaire Podcast. I'm a mom of three littles, ER nurse turned self-made millionaire and lifestyle entrepreneur. I'm bringing you stories, business and mindset tips to help you be shameless about pursuing your ambitions. Hey, Mommy Millionaires. I am so excited about today's special guest. It's going to be a very interesting interview. That's all I have to say. So I first met this guy at his house, actually. I was on his podcast and he grilled me. I thought I was on like Dateline or something like that. It was awesome. And is that even a show, Dateline? And but we had a good time and we talked so much about mindset, about sales, and about building your brand, building your belief up in yourself, and making, you know, something out of nothing. And so I'm really excited for you guys to hear from my special guest. He's the owner of Stratton Oakmont Belfort. He employed over 1,000 stockbrokers and raised over $1.5 billion and started more than $30 million companies from scratch. He's acted as a consultant to more than 50 public companies and has been featured in virtually every major newspaper and magazine in the world. Along the way of making lots of money, overwhelmed and seduced by the dizzying heights of the Wall Street lifestyle, Jordan endured a spectacular and well-publicized fall from grace. Learning invaluable lessons from his mistakes and money lost, he reemerged to become a globally recognized potent force behind extraordinary business successes for himself and others. Today, Jordan Belfort's proprietary Straight Line persuasion system is better than ever. The Straight Line system enables him to empower any company or individual, regardless of background, to create massive wealth, abundance, and entrepreneur success without sacrificing integrity or ethics. Jordan's two international best-selling memoirs, The Wolf of Wall Street and Catching the Wolf of Wall Street, have been published in over 40 countries and translated into 18 languages. The story of his early success and downfall has been turned into a major motion picture starring Leonardo DiCaprio and directed by Martin Scorsese. So I know all of you guys have probably seen this movie. The Wolf of Wall Street was so good. And I was so excited to have him on the podcast today. So let's please welcome Jordan Belfort to the show.
How are you?
I'm excited to have you. Are you excited to talk to the Mommy Millionaires today?
Of course I am. I'm always excited. I love the positioning, Mommy Millionaire. It's just really, it's like, this just says it all, you know?
It's catchy. It's catchy. Do you wish you could be a mommy millionaire? I'm joking.
Well, if it was a weird sexual perversion, yeah. Whatever's gonna, you know, gonna give me the best like thrill, I'll try anything.
Oh my gosh. Okay. See, this is gonna be a fun podcast today. So let's take it all the way back to your childhood, because I want people to know the real Jordan, right? They're used to seeing you, you know, played out by Leonardo DiCaprio as this like big macho guy. And I think you're such a good guy that has a really great, you know, you want the best for people out there. And yeah. And so I want people to know the real Jordan. Where'd you come from?
So I'm from Bayside, Queens. Son of two accountants, middle class family, lower middle class, probably, I guess you could say. And you know, we never had a lot of money, but I had a good education. So we had enough to know how little we had, you know? So that was sort of like, I wasn't like, you know, it wasn't a disempowered background, but it was a background where you sort of, you had the tools education wise and you saw wealth around you, but you didn't have it yourself.
Yeah. So you knew enough to want more.
Correct. And I think I definitely emerged from my childhood into adolescence with this idea that I'm going to be rich and there's nothing going to stop me from getting rich.
So what was your first, like out of high school, what did you get started doing?
Well, when I was in high school, I started making a huge amount of money. So I used to go down to a local beach named Jones Beach in New York, and I'd go down there, I'd sell ices and ice cream blanket to blanket, and I was making back then about $500 a day, which is probably around $2,000-$3,000 a day in today's dollars. And
wow.
At the time, minimum wage is $1.35 an hour, and I was making, you know, $100 an hour, and it was just incredible, changed my life. And that was really I always knew I'd be successful. But from that point forward, 16 years on, I was always known as someone that was like, you know, gonna one day make a ton of money.
Mm-hmm. So you got started on Wall Street, and how did that look?
Well, Wall Street came a bit later. I was that kid that had the lemonade stand. I delivered newspapers, shoveled driveways after snowstorms. I did kids' magic shows. And then I had this big stint on the beach selling ices and made a lot of money. And then my first real business was a meat and seafood company, which I built up from scratch into 26 trucks, went bankrupt, lost everything.
Oh my gosh.
And that was what brought me to Wall Street.
Okay, so how old were you when that happened, when you first filed bankrupt? 23. And what was going on in your mindset at that time?
Well, I mean, I think that the meat and seafood business for me was like the greatest education in the world. It basically showed me everything you shouldn't do in a business if you want to make money. I thought that I was such a great salesperson that if I just worked really hard and sold really hard, I'd make a lot of money. But in the business world, it's got to be more than that. And then as I was going bankrupt, I overexpanded, I was undercapitalized, I was drawing on credit, made every mistake you could make. And then eventually, when I went out of business, I had heard a rumor about a kid that was from our neighborhood, and he was making $1 million a year, which back then was like $3 million. I didn't believe it, and I finally ran into this guy, and he had a beautiful Ferrari and a beautiful girl and a beautiful suit. And he was like this kind of dweeby guy growing up. I'm like, wait, I want the car, I want the suit, I want the life, I want the girl. And I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm a stockbroker. And I was like, really? He was like, yeah, I made $1 million last year. And that, to me, at that time, was inconceivable.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, what I'm sure many of your listeners have probably said to themselves at some point, I was like, if this idiot can make $1 million a year, I can make 10. That's what I thought, right?
Yeah.
And that was what drove me down to Wall Street. And I went down to Wall Street and got myself a job. And I really sold myself a job because my resume was not looking so good at this point. I just declared bankruptcy. I dropped out of dental school. I was going to be a dentist for a few hours in there, right? So that's a whole other story. But I sold myself a job. And the funny thing is the guy, he was obviously very, very, you know, prolific, prophetic in his views. He says, you know, because I started pitching the guy a stock, like right, I started trying to stand out. And like, I've never even sold stock before. He's like, whoa, whoa, calm down. Like, I've never heard anything like this. Either one of two things is going to happen to you. You know, either you're going to end up being the most famous stockbroker ever, or you're going to end up in jail. Well, the guy was a genius. He was right on both accounts, right? They hired me, and that's where I started.
Wow. Okay. So, you know, I love to talk about mindset, and I know you do too, when it comes to sales. Like, what was going on? Like, why do you think you were so successful right away, like being, you know, in the stock market? Compared to everybody else that tries the same thing and they think they know what they're doing too, but you figured it out.
I had a natural born talent for sales and persuasion. There's no doubt about that. And over the years, even before that, selling out door to door, meet and see if I'd hone that skill to perfection. And then that was really, you know, stockbroker on Wall Street's a glorified salesman. I was a great salesman, yeah. Right? And I think intuitively for me, I knew what people needed to hear to get them to say yes. I understood it intuitively what would have to be said to change someone's mind in terms of how certain they were about whether or not it made sense to take action. At the end of the day, that's what sales really is. It's the transference of certainty. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're really, really certain that what you have is great. They should be doing it. And the prospect is not as certain because they don't know all the facts. Well, so the idea in sales is somehow you have to explain what you know, all these wonderful things that you know about your product, these benefits that it has, and explain that in a way to a person that makes them very certain. And eventually they become so certain that their level of certainty crosses over their
predisposition to not taking action, which most they don't want to, they don't want to risk. So you have to overcome that inertia. And once you do, that's when people buy. Now that's an equation that people like myself and other natural born salespeople, we automatically run it. We automatically know how to intervene on it. And we can get people to move from a place of uncertainty to a place of absolute certainty. The problem is for every person like me, you know, who intuitively knows how to do that, there's 10 million more who are just not good at it. They're terrible. They struggle with that. They have other talents. Everyone has, you know, we all have many different gifts. So the thing with sales and persuasion is that it's one of the most important skills you need to have to succeed. So that was this advantage I have as a natural born closer. Now, what ultimately I did is when I started my own firm, I was faced with this issue where I was teaching these kids, and I was a kid myself, but I was teaching them to try to close. And I tasked them with a very difficult sale, which was selling to the richest 1% of Americans. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't do it. I was able to do it. And my junior partner I had trained was able to do it, but they couldn't. And that was baffling because, you know, we're reading from the same script, selling the same stock to the same class of people, yet I'm closing half the people I speak to. My junior partner is closing 30% and they're closing zero, like zero. They didn't close one person. And that really was this, like this moment in time where like everything was on the line. I had started my own brokerage firm. I come up with this idea that, you know, there was a niche market to call the richest 1%. And the kids that I had working for me, I'd previously trained them in how to sell penny stocks, low price stocks, to average moms and pops. That's a much easier sale.
Right.
That's almost like a lotto ticket. They're buying, it's like a dollar, they'll invest a few hundred bucks on a flyer. That's a very different thing than calling up a very sophisticated business person who is financially empowered and who makes a lot of financial decisions every day and saying, hey, I want you to send me $1 million. That's very different than calling the mailman saying, hey, put 200 bucks in, you can make 10 times your money. Different, right?
Right. One,
you know, the latter is a very easy sale, relatively speaking. And the former, as it turned out, the former sale was basically impossible if you weren't a natural born animal closer, right? So
you were faced with this like thing, I have to teach them how to sell like me.
In the sense, I watched in shock how myself and my junior partner, Danny, the Jonah Hill character, how somehow we were able to close these people like at a really, really high rate.
Exactly.
And my guys, the same people calling the same group, all right, with the same leads, the same, they couldn't close a freaking door. And they wanted to quit after a few weeks of this. And I didn't understand. Now, at the time, I was teaching another system. I had a system of sales training. It didn't have a name. But the thing with systems is, any system, is you don't know how good it is or how robust it is until you stress it to the point of fracture. In other words,
that system
I was teaching was good enough for calling moms and pops and selling them a few hundred dollars of a penny stock. Mm-hmm. When I tried to use that same methodology, that same training for sales, to call the richest, toughest, most aggressive investor and say, hey, send me $1 million, the system collapsed. In engineering terms, you call that catastrophic failure. You have a system, like they build a bridge, like, oh, the bridge is working well. And one day, there's one too many cars on the bridge and the wind is blowing 1 mile an hour too much and pop, the bridge collapses. Like, oops, I guess the bridge isn't as strong as we thought, right?
Yeah, a little
well, that's
too late to
my
realize that.
System. So I was forced to develop a new way of training salespeople.
How you came up with the straight line?
That led to the creation of the straight line. So it was basically a necessity out of sheer, you know, they say necessity is the mother of invention. Well,
yes.
That's what happened. I literally had, if I didn't come up with a way of taking what it was basically in very, very simple terms, mm-hmm. was how do you take someone who's not a natural born closer and have them close in the same level as someone that was a natural born closer. Mm-hmm. And I tried everything. Once I figured out, it turned out the unifying concept was the straight line. That essentially there was a goal-oriented conversation with an open, a closed. There were certain things happening as you move them down the line. And once I came up with this philosophy and a bunch of other stuff that it sort of one thought led to cascading thoughts. And it ended up becoming a completely revolutionary way of training people how to close. And the results were so staggering that literally they went from not being able to close a door to being the top closing force in Wall Street, probably sales history. I built the most elite team of salespeople in the world ever seen, thousands and thousands of them, and they were all making millions and millions of dollars. And the mistake I made was a huge error out of youth and experience, greed, drug use, and a lot of other stuff all wrapped up, was that I didn't combine that with ethics and integrity. In other words, you know, the power, and it's a power, the power to persuade, the power to influence. Well, you know, the old saying from Spider-Man, you know, when with great power comes great responsibility. Mm-hmm. Problem was, I taught them this amazing power, but didn't teach them to use it responsibly. And in fact, promoted them to use it irresponsibly. I mean, these were mistakes I made out of youth and inexperience and hubris and whatever, right? Fueled by drugs for sure and greed. And it was
What was one of the biggest ones you feel like you could, if you could go back and change, you would change?
Well, the biggest mistake was, it was that just because you can sell someone something doesn't mean that you should. Mm. Like, for instance, look at iPhones. Let's use the iPhone, for example. Imagine if Apple had invented the iPhone and they had enough parts around to make 500,000 iPhones.
Yeah.
But they had demand for 10 million iPhones. So they said, okay, let's make 10 million. No, the last 9.5 million will suck and they won't work very well and people will hate us, but screw it. You know, we could still make the money and sell. That was the mistake I made. I ran out of good things to sell. Mm. My ability to sell stock outstripped my ability to create stock to sell. The stock business, it doesn't matter. We're not here to talk about learning how to create new companies,
right,
to the public,
right.
But just in essence, it's no different than any other business. In other words, you have the manufacturer, as you want to take companies public, and you distribute with stockbrokers. My ability to distribute outstripped my ability to create things to sell. I should have slowed down my growth, right? And instead, I just kept growing and growing. And there are all these other unintended consequences that happened as a result of that. And I started engaging in behaviors, many of which were unintended and which weren't even making me extra money. But it was this, I got on this carousel or this merry-go-round of growth and more growth and then trying to feed the hungry mouths. And before I knew it, I deluded myself into that thinking of like, everyone does this. It's not, okay, I'm no different. And that might be true, but that doesn't mean it's legal, moral, or ethical, mm-hmm. right? And when you're doing things immorally or unethically and you're small, well, maybe you fly under the radar. But I don't do things small. I did it big and I was the largest firm in America and you're going to draw attention and so forth. So everything unwound not because of the sales trade. That was the part that lived on forever and helped me create a new life. What unwound was the fact that at the core, I wasn't delivering value. In the beginning, I was, and then I started growing and just growing for the sake of growing without delivering value. The purpose of business, as entrepreneurs, as mommy millionaires, what you're trying to do at the end, if you really think, is you're delivering value to
yes.
people.
Yeah, totally.
And you, as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, what you need to learn to do is to deliver that value in a cost-effective manner. So let's say what you're delivering is worth $1 million. Well, if it costs you $2 to deliver it, you're like Lucy, you know, I Love Lucy, where you're trying to make it up on volume, you're losing on every sale. Not going to work so well. So the purpose of a business, you form a business to deliver the value, right? So you have a product, a service, whatever that could be. It could be tangible, intangible, right? Then you have the business operations that delivers that value. Part of those operations are going to be sales and marketing. Marketing is how do you identify the right people to sell to, and the sales function is to then close them, sell, and monetize everything, right? Where it breaks down is if you're selling something at a price, but it's no real value there. Hmm. So like, for instance, I have courses I sell now. If I charge $1,000 for a course, I damn better make sure that when people are done with that course, they'll say, I would have paid 10. I'd have paid 10,000. If I do that, I will be in business forever and have a wonderful reputation like I have now. Now, if you look at myself, no one ever, the only thing you'll say, oh, he was an asshole. Yeah, you're right. I was 30 years ago. Yeah, I get it. I know you hate me. I know I was, right? I'm sorry, okay? The point is every transaction I engage in right now, it's purposely priced so that people say, damn, I would have paid more. It's like he's underpriced. And that's what every great business does that. Think about it. You use Gmail, it's free. Right. But you know, what are they doing? They're making it up in 84 different ways with information. And so the ultimate example really is the Silicon Valley model where they, and it's really what I adopt. When I think of a business now, I never wonder how am I going to monetize it? And that was the mistake I made with my own podcast. So I actually redid my podcast because when I started my podcast, I didn't want to do it, and I was dragged into it by my son. Thank God, it was a great decision, right? So when I spent the first 4 or 5 months just like trying different guests out, what my audience resonated, what they did, and I also got talked into having advertisers on my podcast to make money. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that my podcast is the single highest performing podcast in the world, bar none. I'm not saying it has the most views. If I say you should buy this, the conversion rate is astronomical. So I had so many advertisers wanting to advertise on my podcast and pay me money. But the lesson I learned, I said, you know what? I started doing it. I said, you know what? No, it's not ready yet. The most important thing is to make the podcast awesome. Yeah. You want to make the podcast so awesome that everyone just wants to listen to my podcast. So I stopped advertising and said, no, I'm just going to focus on giving my people massive value.
Yeah.
And then it'll take care of itself. I'll figure out how to monetize it, right?
Why aren't you selling your digital products you're selling your own products by...
Well, I don't even. I guess I do by default, right?
Right.
But I'm not in there hawking it like, hey, I want you to buy this product, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. My point is that in the same way Facebook, when they first started, if you saw the movie Social Network, that big debate with Justin Timberlake playing the other guy, the devil's advocate, where one guy, I think Alberto was his name, Saverin, wanted to advertise right from the beginning. And it was the other guys, the names don't matter here, okay? I don't want to confuse them. But the point was, is that the decision that was made, okay, by Facebook was that, Zuckerberg, was that, no, we don't even know what this is yet. Let's make it cool and great.
Yeah.
And then we can worry about monetizing it, right? And I think that's a very, very sound philosophy. Now, remember, you have to balance that with the realities of life and business. He had venture capital behind him. He could run at a massive loss. But just always remember that it's not just always about charging right away. If you have something that has massive value and you can deliver that value cost effectively, eventually you will get rich from that.
Oh my gosh, I love that. So I was thinking this whole time you were talking, I'm like, the mommy millionaires listening in right now, I think every single one of them are very, very good at marketing themselves. They'll get out there on social media, they have their podcast, and they are all about giving value. But the number one question I get is like, I don't know how to price myself, or I don't know how to close. Like, sure. I'm getting on conversations, but I'm not closing. Why do you think that is?
Well,
why are they having trouble?
So that's what I do, all right? And the biggest mistake that people make, and you really hit on the crux of this major pain point out there, is that people look at marketing as a quantifiable, learnable skill. So they'll take a course in marketing, mm-hmm. they'll learn how to do a podcast, how to create a sales funnel, how to build up their brand, so to speak, right? And there are lots of courses out there and lots of templates that focus on that. And that's good because marketing is a crucial aspect of business. The purpose of marketing is to identify who your best buyers are and then to figure out the appropriate way, the most cost-efficient way to bring those people into your sales funnel so you can then close them. That's what you're doing. That's what's going on, right?
Right.
But
and then they're not closing them. So they're not making money.
Is to close them. But here's the deal. In the same way that you have taught yourself to be a brand builder and a marketer, You can teach yourself. I have a course. I sell a course. And by the way, my whole system says, if you don't want to buy my course, I give away enough stuff for free. Because you go to my website, I have so much free shit on there, because all I know is that if people look at my free stuff, they always buy the paid stuff because the free stuff is so great. They're like, damn, it's free stuff. I wonder what the paid stuff is like.
Well, even in your book, Way of the Wolf, I mean, you give it away in there so much.
No, it's in there. Exactly. You just buy my book, right? You can buy my book. But the point is once you realize it's once you can get into your head how crucial it is to be able, and don't even call it close, to communicate in using language. Okay. Your thoughts, ideas, hopes, dreams. It goes way beyond just selling. How do you get your kids to want to make their bed in the morning and do their homework? If you're a teacher, how do you stress the value of education? If you're a lawyer, how do you close a jury on the innocence of your client? If you're a pastor, how do you influence your congregation on a certain moral principle? If you're a politician, God forbid, how do you get people to vote for you? How do you get your point across in a way that connects with people and moves them to take action? That's what ethical persuasion is all about. And without that one skill, it's very, very hard to make money. It's not that you can't make money. You just work 5 times or 10 times as hard to make money. Making money should be effortless. It's not hard. The hardest you will ever work is when you're not making money. Because that's when you're figuring out. See, there's this period we have to be, and this is a required period. When you're cracking the code, when you're trying things, you're pivoting, you're seeing what's working, what's not working. That's what businesses always have to go through. It's very few and far between when one like, oh, I started, it was perfect. No, most times it takes a bunch of pivots, right? Mm-hmm. You're lining up the elements of success. But once you have them lined up and you know what your marketing is and you've got your selling side figured out, making money is effortless, it's fun, it's empowering, and money will literally tumble in massive abundance, but you gotta know how to close, because without that, it's like you're entering the world with your hands tied behind your back. I don't get it. I don't understand how people think they can move through life without knowing how to communicate effectively.
Lot of women have a problem. They feel icky, right? Like I hear this all the time. Oh, I feel icky charging for something. I'm like, what? Like, I don't understand it either, except for women base a lot of their worth on how much they get paid. And people have a lot of women, what I see is low worth. And so where the disconnect is. So what would you say? I know from a male perspective,
the biggest mistake I think a lot of young micro entrepreneurs make when they're getting started is they get caught up in trading time for money. A lot of them are in service businesses. And they're saying, like, what I'm doing can't be worth that much money because my time, like, how can I charge $10,000 to $20,000 or $50,000 for an hour of my time? All right, here's the thing. When I go out and speak publicly, I'll get $150,000 for 5 hours or 4 hours on a speech or 2 hours even, right? It's not based on am I worth it as a human. It's what the other people can make from listening to me.
Yes.
What are they going to make? Someone will gladly pay you $10,000, yep, but they're going to make $30,000.
Right.
It's not about what you're worth. It's what problem you're solving and the value it creates for them. It's not about what it costs you to create. So you'll say, oh, it only cost me $1 to do this, or I have a digital product and it's cost me, how do I charge $5,000? It's for free. I've already, well, you know, it's called intellectual property. And it's based on the pain point that it's resolving. That's the value. You can't bring value to, like, I'm not worth it or not. It's about what problem you're solving. It's a reframe. And because people don't care about you in the sense that I'll pay you $100,000 because you're worth it. No, it's what your information of the product, what problem it solves for me, and how much that's worth. That's it.
Oh my gosh, this is so good. I mean, it's answering the question, what's in it for me? That's all that the person on the other line cares about is what's in it for me. And if you help them see the ROI.
Remember this, that's what's in it for me is a logical equation we run, cost-benefit ratio, value proposition. That's one side. And that's important, right? Because people buy on, people need to justify their decisions with logic. But they don't buy on logic. People buy on emotion. So what makes someone actually buy from you is not so much they think it's worth it. They imagine themselves in the future using the product or service and feeling good. Mm-hmm. They future pace themselves. They say, you know what? I can see if I buy this, my life will be better. And they actually run this movie and see themselves in the future succeeding or feeling better, feeling more in control, less trouble. And that's the value of the future pace, right? As salespeople, once you know that, it allows you to really approach things in a very different, very strategic way, where you actually use language to help them accomplish that without lying, without exaggerating, to make someone essentially step into the future to see themselves using the product that you've sold them and already feeling good. They already can see the benefits. They can feel them. And that's when you start to close at a really high level. So with the straight line system, what we teach people is how to do both. How do you essentially get someone logically certain? Yep, what you're saying makes sense. It's got a great value proposition, excellent cost-benefit ratio. It's best of breed. Empirically, it adds up. But what gets them to buy is when they say, wow, and I could see myself using this and feeling good, and they future pace. That's the key.
Okay, I love this. What are you, like, when you visualize, do you visualize a lot?
Everyone does.
Okay, so what are you visualizing, like, when you're thinking about your life right now? What are you future pacing?
It's getting worse every day. I'm getting older, more wrinkles. I went to an Aerosmith concert in Vegas, and like this, when he played this song "Dream On," it was like a knife. Like every day, I look in the mirror, and I see these lines in my face getting clearer. The past is gone. I'm like, ah!
Oh my gosh!
What do I visualize? I'm very fortunate. You know, I have a wonderful life. I have wonderful children. I have great relationships. I've had a lot of struggles, a lot of controversy in my life, right? I think that's probably a good thing. I think life without struggle is kind of boring. I think that I'm going to take a wild guess at a lot of the mommy millionaires. I'm guessing you guys really sweat the small stuff a lot more than
yes.
You could,
yeah.
You know? And it's hard to, you know, there's no advice I could probably give you to say, don't sweat the small stuff, because that doesn't really work. But what I will tell you is that at the end of the day, I'm probably older than most of your listeners, okay? I look pretty good still, but I'm older than most of
you. You do look good, yeah.
You know, I mean, I look young at least, right? But I will tell you that when I look back at my life, at some of the things that I allowed to bother me and worry me and take away my happiness, I want to fucking scream. I want to scream, because the things I should have really worried about, I probably didn't spend enough time worrying about. And the things that I cared so much about turned out to be irrelevant. Like, for example, yes, money is crucial. You need to make a lot of money, because money solves problems. Money gives you security for you and your family and for everyone you love. And it allows you to live in this wonderful world with all these great things to experience. So money's great. So it's not that I'm not saying don't make a lot of money. So you should make a lot of money. That's not what I mean. But I worried so much what other people thought of me.
Really?
About being judged. Yeah. Yes. I never let it stop me from becoming successful or stop me from taking action. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was very insecure when I was younger. And I always felt I had something to prove. I think most people like that. And it's laughable now. I don't feel like that anymore. I'm like, really don't care anymore. I mean, like, what the hell? I mean, how many more years do I have to live? I'm not going to die tomorrow. But it's like we're all have this very short, finite time, and it just doesn't make any sense. Just the other day, you know, I'm in a relationship with a woman, right? She's very kind. She's very sweet. She's very beautiful. Very nice. Great girl, right? I'm very lucky. And she wanted to do something, and I was like, no, I got to work. I'm like, and I realized, like, you know what? I pulled that same shit on my last relationship, and it was toxic, because the truth is, it would wait until the next day. It didn't matter. No one has to work that hard. Like, I think sometimes that we punish ourselves, because it's like we feel like that we shouldn't have joy until we've completed something. And I think there's time for both. I've really come to that conclusion that there's enough time, and you're not in a race with just who dies with the most toys. So like I've learned now to have some more balance in my life, where I definitely will take time, and you know, I'm not gonna let the guilt of an unfinished project just destroy me inside and not let me enjoy time with my family and my loved ones. And in the past, I've done it. I've had two New Year's Eves ago. I was busy writing a book on New Year's Eve because I said, I'm not going to enjoy New Year's till I finish this book. And that was ridiculous, you know? I mean, the book ended up being a big bestseller and it was very successful, but it would have waited a day.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, you could have stopped the flow for that. So, okay, I have this. I know you were in Taft Prison, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I grew up in Bakersfield. I don't know if you remember that, but we talked about that. I mean, I went to Taft College. So how was it like when you are faced with that? Is that when you stop caring about what other people think? Because you're like, everybody knows about this. This is all over the place. Like, I can't, no. I have no control over this now.
No, that wasn't really, I never cared about the jail thing. That never bothered
really?
Me. Really? No, never, that never bothered me at all. And what bothered me was there's this false narrative for many years that I wasn't trying to pay back victims or evade my fine, which was such complete, utter nonsense. It was a complete and utter fabrication, not rooted in truth, not reality, but like the government had a couple of people, not many, that were there. It was a civil division, and they were trying to create some story, I guess, because like, I guess it's hard for some people, civil servants, to stomach this level of success I've achieved after breaking the law and writing a book about it. Bothered some people, not many. I have tremendous respect for most people in the government. They're great, they treated me fairly, but a couple people, and they spread this false narrative.
Wow, I didn't know
that. They didn't
pay
people back. It's not true, it's still in the press out there, and I don't give a shit, because it's just not true. I know it's not true. I'm sure it cost me a lot of speaking jobs. Someone say, oh, he's probably still a bad guy, whatever. I have enough goodness in my life right now that I can still do fine and have people. They don't want to harm me. Shame on them, okay, or their loss, okay, because they'll always get a great experience. But that was something that bothered me because it was about who I am today. It was simply a false, it was a lie. It was a complete lie. But eventually I got to the point where I was like, you know what? I could try. Why are you trying to change the narrative? Because it's like pissing into the wind. Nobody cares. The newspapers have their angle. They want, like, you know, the press, yeah. They're the narrative, that's the narrative, whatever. One day the truth will come out, or maybe it won't, or who cares? The people who know me love me, and they know what a great person I am and how many people I help and empower. So I go to bed at night feeling awesome.
That's what matters. Yeah. But so how did you get into this mindset, though? Because I think so many of the people listening in right now, they would let that destroy them, right? That would make them go into a deep depression.
Yeah, it did hurt me it really did bother me for a while. And then I think what happened was, is I got to the point where I just did helps my, the system that I created and that I really spent years and years refining, straight line. I get like every day, I get like 20, 30 emails a day, and I can't walk down the street without someone saying, I cannot walk down 100 yards outside without someone saying to me, thank you for what you do.
Wow.
Changed my life. You motivate me every day. I listen to all. I went to the Lakers game last night. And after the game, when I was out, I went to Fleming's. And I walked in. The matron was like, oh, my God, I love your stuff. I sat down, three people. It's like everywhere I go. And that's the truth of my life. The truth is that I help people. People love my stuff. And I have zero complaints. It's great stuff, and it's priced way less than what it should be. So if a couple of idiots are going to try to make me into a go ahead. But that's because it took time, though. And also, you know, I did have shit to make up for.
Yeah.
Like, I did make mistakes. But I started to realize, you know what? If there is a cosmic balance or a karmic force here, I'm on the right side of that, right? I'm going to heaven. I'm going to freaking heaven, because everything I do right now and every life I touch, they're better off for it. So that's it. And when you get, if you're feeling guilty or bad of what other people say, maybe you have to ask yourself, is there any truth to what they're saying?
Yeah.
And if there's not, then you know what? Stay the course. Put your head down. You'll win in the end. If, however, people are saying things, well, maybe you have to look at that. What kind of feedback? Maybe was there truth? I thought maybe it might do something. No, well, it was completely jealous idiots, and it was not rooted in truth. And so I stayed the course and became victorious as a result of that. When I say victorious, meaning in my own mind, I conquered any negativity that might have made me feel inside.
Do you do affirmations?
No.
Do you think they work?
They can't hurt. And I think that they're like a warm bath. They probably feel really good. And you should probably take a bath every day. So why not do affirmations every day? I think affirmations are a tool in the toolbox that needs to be accompanied with other things, meaning that you can't affirm yourself to success. But what you can do is go back and work on the root causes of the beliefs that have made you feel a certain way, have you believing certain false narratives, and then go back to those root experiences. And I think it's far more powerful to attack the roots of our limiting beliefs than to try to wish them or affirm them away. In addition to that, you have to say to yourself, what real world skills do I lack? I'm great. Are you? All you mommy millionaires out there, I'm gonna ask you an honest question. Are you great? Or do you kind of suck at what you do? Yeah. No offense. Are you really great? Like, did you do the work? Like, in the real world, are you great? Because your brain knows if you're not. You can't fool yourself. You can't delude yourself. You know. So don't, if you're thinking like that, the question is, do you possess the real world skills required to be great at what you do? Mm-hmm. And here's the good news, Mommy Billy, is if you don't, just go out and learn them.
Yeah.
As human beings, the gift we have is we can make ourselves great. I'm never going to be Roger Federer. I love tennis. I wish I was. I'm never going to be Federer. And I got news for you. You're never going to close like me. I'm the world's greatest salesman. No, seriously. But I could teach you to close so good that will never limit you in anything you do. I've learned to play tennis so good that I can have fun and do great in any court. I'm never going to be the best. You don't have to be the best. You don't have to be perfect. You could be good enough and live the most incredible, empowered life. And guess what? While you might not be able to close as good as me, I could teach you to be good enough, and you have skills I don't possess. Every human being has some special skills that you're just naturally awesome at. Mm-hmm. And you want to play into your strengths, shore up your weaknesses, all right? And that's how you succeed. But what I'm saying is, don't delude yourself. I'm showing you a little tough love. Maybe there's work to do.
Right.
If you feel insecure, like maybe I'm not good, well, are you good enough? Or do you need to skill up? If that's the case, then take a deep breath, skill up. Because your brain knows. And once you possess those skills, you'll do the work. You'll take the action because you know, A, that you deserve to succeed. B, that you have to possess the tools to succeed. Or else your brain would say, well, I do it. I'm probably not going to succeed anyway. Mm-hmm. I kind of suck at what I do. I can't really close. I'm not a great marketer. If you have that going on in your head.
Everybody can feel that too.
Yeah, you know it. So, and you can change it on a dime.
I love that. So are you close with your kids?
Extremely.
And how does that look? Like, do they have a lot of questions? Do they, like, what do they do now?
Well, I mean, all questions have been answered. I mean, like, you know, my life is a very public life, right? So obviously a lot of things that, like, they had to deal with over the years.
Yeah.
It was a movie when they were in college when the movie came out.
Okay.
And the kids are singing songs about me, the Jordan Belfort song. I mean, it was this massive cult following out there among teenagers and kids in college. And so, I mean, that obviously had to be addressed many years ago with my children. I'm very fortunate. My children are very successful, very happy, very well adjusted, and they're healthy. I have 3 children in all, and they're amazing.
Oh, I love that you are close to them now.
I am awesome. Very close.
I mean, because it could have been something so different.
I saw 3 kids in the last hour. They were in my office working for me.
Oh, really? That's cool. You know, there's this quote that, this is how I first learned about you, was the quote about, I'm going to say it wrong, but you know the one that you say, like, the only thing that's holding you back from success is the BS story?
Yeah.
Okay. So say it so I don't do it.
Well, I say, what's holding you back is the story or bullshit story that you tell yourself about why you can't get what you want in life. In other words, the story that you tell yourself about why you can't get what you want is usually what stops you from getting what you want. And the reason for that is that the story stops you from getting honest. Like, for example, I'll give you the perfect metaphor.
Okay. Okay.
A car navigation system, right? They're really, really good these days. Right? They, you know, you plug in the destination. Here's where I want to go. That's my destination, right? And then you basically, the car navigation will take you there, turn left. It has software that's so advanced now, communication satellites, right? It gets you there, right? But there's one more thing that you need for this navigation system to work. And that is an accurate starting point. Every car, every navigation system has a chip, a locator chip. So it knows your exact location at the start. So what a navigation system does, it says, here's where I want to go, here's where I am, and it takes you there, right? The same is true of success. You're at a current point right now. The question is, what is that point? What do you know? What don't you know? What skills need to be improved? What relationships do you lack? You know, the story, what the story does, your story, it stops you from saying, you know what? I am not succeeding now because I need to learn stuff, do stuff, align myself. It's just, oh, I'm too old, I'm too young, I don't want money, it's too hard, I'll get greedy. So you start telling yourself a story about I can't get rich because, rather than saying I'm not rich because, the truth is you probably lack 3 or 4 cornerstone skills that are required for the achievement of success. So the story, and if you would get honest for a second, then you would have a basis to make change.
Then yeah, you gotta get honest.
The navigation system, which is the rules of success, can work because you say, okay, here's what has to change. I gotta do this, I gotta do that, I gotta learn it. You skill up, you learn a new mindset. So without that, you basically have no accurate starting point.
Okay, so let's play a game. What if you were in 2020 and you're 23 years old again? You just declared bankruptcy. And you still know all of the things you know now. You have all of your skills, everything. What, and you're at $0. What would you do to become rich again in this day and age?
Logistics.
Oh, okay. Can you expand on that?
there's a little known industry out there that I have a massive following in the logistics world. Logistics is how do all the packages in the world go from here to there, right? Who organizes all that stuff? It is the most massive industry out there. And it plays into all the strengths I have because it's a very sales-centric industry. It's fun. There's a lot of camaraderie and it's awesome. So I probably, if I was going to start over right now, that's one thing I would certainly consider. Another thing is, you know, I'm working on some things right now with education.
Yeah.
You know, really taking sales and making it a formal educational process. I believe that the straight line system should be a required course in life. It just should be. It's a, what I teach should be a required course because without it, it's like you're like just not as effective.
People struggle. Okay, there's so many people struggling. And if they understood sales, they understood your straight line system.
It changes people's, it doesn't just make them better closers.
Yeah.
It makes them more effective human beings. It just does because it allows you to move through life in an empowered way. I would consider doing some things in that area with, you know, really formalizing it and getting it into the educational fabric of this country to start for sure.
Wow. I love that. Okay. I hope that that goes well for you because I agree that like it should be in all of the schooling. I remember when I was 18 and I started selling cell phones and I was crying, role-playing on the floor, like trying to sell a cell phone because people were watching me. I'm like, oh, I don't know how to do this. It was so stressful, but that should be something that we just know how to do because you set everybody up for success. So, okay, Jordan, I loved your book. I want everybody to pick up Way of the Wolf and subscribe to your podcast, but where can people find you? Where do you like to hang out?
So you can go to jordanbelfort.com.
Okay.
On Instagram, it's Wolf of Wall Street. My podcast is The Wolf Dens. You can Wolf Den. You can find it on iTunes or Spotify, wherever else you find podcasts.
But I check out also, I do this like big, like right now I'm doing this massive thing. I give people like a huge discounts. If you go to my store, my Shopify store. I really believe that sales should be a required course in life. And you know who else says it? Warren Buffett says it too.
And Kayla Kraft says it too. I believe it.
I think people that know, really know, they say it's like, how, I mean, I don't get it. I just could not imagine going through life not being able to close the deal. What a, like, oh my God, you just, it's like you're making it so much harder on yourself to succeed and just get, forget money, just get your way. Get into it, meet a great guy. How do you meet a great guy? How do you put your best self out there? How do you get your, how do you make someone understand the value you have as a human being? Mm-hmm. That's sales.
I agree.
I've been sold by a lot of women and I've been like, I'm an easy close. The point is that it's just sales. Guys are selling girls, like going to these dating courses and all this crazy stuff, but girls should have the same tools. Why not? Mm-hmm. It's crazy. You should all take my course. I don't care.
Okay, so what's the course called?
It's called Straight Line Persuasion.
Oh, Straight Line Persuasion, that's right.
Start off and get the free stuff. Go to my website, get a free training. Just go for free. I don't care whether you buy it or not. You should buy it because it's the best money you ever spent. But I don't care if you just do the free stuff. Just but learn, at least skill up, because you'll see if you learn this much of it, you'll say, oh my God. Like you, all these aha moments and be like, oh my God. Like, you know? So anyway, I just think it's a great thing for everyone to learn. And if you don't learn it from me, then learn it from somewhere else. Just learn it. But there's a lot of charlatans out there and false gurus. So one thing never accuses me of is being a false guru. I got accused of maybe never that, you know? So anyway, Kaylee, you're awesome. I think I love what you're doing. Love what you're doing. I hope all your people subscribe to my podcast. It's really fun and it's really enlightening. I always speak for about 30 minutes now, my new format. So I get to a little monologue first, which is always irreverent and funny. And you learn too about sales and life.
Yes. Okay. Well, I love your podcast and I know the Mommy Millionaires will love it too. So I'll make sure to link up all of your stuff, get them over there. And before we go, tell them what is one thing that they could do in the next 30 days that's going to change their whole entire mindset.
Well, I would certainly pick up the phone and call your customers. Mm. Pick up your phone.
Yeah.
The phone is the most powerful tool. There's only so much money you can get from someone, and meaning how much value you can give them. Offer something that you have to call someone. Don't look at your customers as like just one-time customers. Lifetime value. And just always focus on giving more than you ask for. Make sure you price your courses or whatever you're selling, products, whether they're tangible or intangible. Don't try to overprice and get over on someone. Underprice them so they want to buy from you again and again and again. And pick up the phone and call. And at least read my book, if nothing else, so you at least have the tools to close them, because it will come back to 1,000-fold.
Oh my gosh, so good. Well, thank you so much, Jordan, for being on the Mommy Millionaire Show. It was so fun. I appreciate you so, so much.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Mommy Millionaire podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to mommymillionaire.co. Make sure to follow Mommy Millionaire on Spotify and iTunes. And it would mean the world to me if you left a review of the show. As always, ladies, go out there and get what you want.